Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everybody, welcome to the Super J-Cast. I'm Joel, I'm joined by Damon McDonald. It is Wednesday, 1st of October, 2025. This is episode 381. It's a great day. We're back. Arsenal are back in the title race.
Yes.
Half-time, playing against Olympiacos. Back to the old traditions of Super J-Cast recording in the middle of Arsenal matches. Happy days.
Happy days are here. They're here. Excited. I was watching, what was I watching the other day? I don't know what they had. I don't know what they were giving us. It wasn't City United. It was, because that was like 2 weeks ago. What the fuck was I watching? Might have been Crystal Palace, maybe? I forget.
Palace against Liverpool, maybe? Because they
Maybe that was it.
Ended their unbeaten start to the season.
Maybe that was it.
Arsenal still remain the only team to go unbeaten in an entire season.
Let's go. Let's go. Is it the year? This is the year.
Even though we're still behind, it felt like a momentous swing in the just the vibes, right? The vibes are on our side now, because I could very conceivably have imagined Liverpool beating Crystal Palace and us losing to Newcastle, because we always lose at Newcastle, and Liverpool taking an 8-point lead, and then everyone would be like, oh, well, it's over now. You know, it's just, when are Liverpool going to wrap it up? How many points are they going to win by? But now, they lost. Last-minute winner scored by a former Arsenal man, Eddie Nketiah from the Hareland Academy. And Arsenal getting their own last-minute equaliser up at Newcastle. So it's now, we're just 2 points behind.
I love it.
We're coming.
It's
Liverpool, we're coming for you. I'm not saying the next bit, but you know the rest.
I guess I do. Yes, we're coming for you. We're coming for you. What is it? Scouser? Is that how you say it? Scouser?
Yeah. Scousers.
Okay. What does that exactly mean?
Oh no, Arsenal are coming. You're going to batter us?
Batter? Is that just a derogatory? It's not really a derogatory term, is it?
I don't think so. I think it's just informal, just slang. Liverpudlian, I suppose, would be the polite thing. I don't know if we've got any Scousers listening. Let us know. Do you mind being called Scousers?
Yeah, you have to. I like that. I like the... That's one thing I'm very envious of, is that...
Hey, calm down.
What? You just have clubs right up the road from each other. It's fucking unbelievable. It really is crazy. And I told you, my YouTube algorithm has a lot of hooligan history. I don't know why I find that very fascinating.
Have you ever watched the movie Green Street?
You know, I may have. Yeah, I may have. I'm always thinking I did.
It's hilarious because it's all the actors like are Americans putting on English acts, really, really bad right. English accents. It's so good.
Love it. Yeah, there's
you
a couple
what,
that.
Mate? Are you coming at me for a fight? I'll batter you, my son.
Park life. That's more Cockney. But yes, I love it. I love the history. I don't know why. And I guess it's more of things that I'm deathly afraid of. Like, I would be so afraid getting caught up in, like, you just have for, you know, a quick lunch.
Say, like, your next trip here, is that what you want me to organize?
No.
Hooligans trip to Millwall.
Right. Yeah, get me in the firm with fucking West Ham or some shit. No, that would not be, I would not be good. I would be, I'd either be the guy at the very end of the pack, or I would be just kind of, you know, making an appearance and then just so people knew I was there, but then not really doing much of nothing. I would find like the other person that's probably in the same boat as me that don't really want to be there. And we would just kind of, we would wrestle. We would kind of like just grab their shirts and, you know, throw a couple hard but safe punches in safe places. You know, that's what I would do. I would lean on my pro wrestling know-how. And that's what we would do. I don't think that would work at all. I would get my head stomped in. But that would, like, getting, I feel bad for the people getting caught in the crossfire, actually. Like, because they don't give a shit. Once they start throwing chairs and shit, it's like, you know, who, if you're in the way, you're in the way. And there are a lot of strays, I would think. So I do feel bad for that. I feel bad for the poor businesses. like they're just trying to serve lunch. You know what I mean? Like the pubs getting smashed up and shit. Like, what the fuck? But it is an interesting. I have like three books on it. And I have one that's just like, it's like an encyclopedia. Not really, you know, but it's a softback. But it gives like the history of every fucking firm. Like everywhere. I thought that was very interesting. I don't know why. I just find it, I find it amazing how they would steal clothes when they would go to like Italy and shit and then sell them here, you know, so everybody's wearing fucking, you know, the newest, you know, I don't know, fucking, I don't know, you know what I mean? The casual wear.
Yeah. I think it's an American thing. American people do seem to have a fascination with British hooligan culture.
Yeah. I don't know.
The worst if I ever experienced a live game was being attacked by a fellow Arsenal fan.
You were saying,
have I told you this story?
Yeah, where you were kind of making a little scene, you know, kind of not rooting against, but like just making comments, and they told you, they grabbed you, and they were like, "Fuck you, you're a fan of Arsenal, yeah. You can't say that." Yeah. How old were you then?
Early 20s, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've seen videos and documentaries on all the old, you know, like in the 80s and shit, and early 90s. God damn, I'm just like they're just brawling the crowd, and then they fucking go onto the field, and they like in the middle of the game. I'm just like, holy shit, guys, wow. Like, and here's the thing too. I don't think I've ever cared that much about a sport or anything in my life to go to that extreme. Like, I just can't think of anything that I would be willing.
If I'm there on pitch side and I've made the effort to get a ticket and be there live, as I do, I think I'm well within my right to express my displeasure and swear and hurl abuse at the players. And yeah. I don't, you know, the teachers said that it wasn't appropriate behaviour at Esther's first football match, but I said, look, I bought my ticket. I'm totally entitled to be honest about her level of performance, but other teams are available.
You know, she's going to shit the bed, as they say. you got to teach her.
How's she going to improve?
Thank you. And don't give me the fact that she's what, six? Don't give me that. She got to learn. I agree. Take her yelling at her in the back seat. That was a piss poor performance. We're not getting ice cream. We're right home.
You're walking home, sunshine.
That's right. And then when you get home, it's we're doing 400 volleys. Yeah, we're gonna work on this. Yeah. Sly tackle her. Get up. Dad, you spiked me. Right.
It's just lunging challenge.
Daddy, my shins are bleeding. Get up.
Toughen you up. Toughen you up.
That's right. Ah, Lord. Parenting 101 with Damon and Joel. Brought to you by Verizon. Where would you like to go first?
A video game recommendation. I should have brought up last week and I forgot to.
What's that?
I have been playing, it's a very short game actually, called Cannibal Abduction.
Cannibal Abduction, okay.
It's by a group called Puppet Combo, and it's sort of lo-fi VHS style horror. Like the kind of, with the sort of graphics of sort of a mid to late 90s PlayStation 1 game.
Okay.
I mean, the title says it all, really. It's sort of like Texas Chainsaw Massacre style thing where you're trying to escape from an old farmhouse in rural America. All the kind of lo-fi stuff with the crap graphics and audio just really works. It's very...
Flash animation.
I just found it absolutely terrifying. So I played it at night, like all the lights off with the sound up, and I was like, oh!
Really?
It's fun to... be scared off your tits.
I don't like being scared at all, Joel. I gotta be honest with you. I hate it. I hate that feeling. Do you have a lot of Halloweenish, like camp, not campground, but like hayride things and people come out and scare you and shit? Do you have that over there?
Yeah. I mean, for me, Halloween is sort of more wholesome family stuff, like, you know, going to the pumpkin patch and getting a pumpkin and carving it with the kids and sort of children things rather than that. But
you get yourself a pumpkin spice latte.
Pumpkin spice latte, yeah.
Yeah, in your UGG boots, yeah, in your floppy hat, getting your Instagram
very, very tight yoga pants.
Yeah, you're a basic bitch, is what you're trying to tell me, Joel. You're a basic bitch. I love it. Now we have those goofy, like, you know, haunted theme park things, and you walk through it or you take a hayride through it, and there are people that, you know, are all dressed up theatrically and,
you know, with
I don't want
I hate that.
Me too. I don't want to be scared, because my problem is that I know it's coming.
I don't want to be directly threatened by a stranger with a weapon. That's crossing the line for me.
Well, I agree, but like, don't you find it amazing that they glorify, like, okay, this is not me like saying they should ban these things. These are horrible. That's not it. But I do think it's kind of like, oh, all right, that they really glorify murder. You know what I mean? Like,
this is extremely cool. Like, murder's great.
Right. I just don't understand. Like, oh, this guy in a ski mask just stabbed this young lady. Oh, okay, let's see the next. And like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just a weird thing. I've never really been a big Halloween-y guy. I got to be honest with you. Never been a big Halloween
guy. That even goes back to sort of the coverage of serial killers and stuff. And,
well, that's true, yeah.
You know, women at the trials of, like, Richard Ramirez and...
Yeah.
Jeffrey Dahmer, like, sending them nude photos and love letters and stuff. It's always... That level of violence has always been glorified in the West.
Yeah. And here's the thing too, like, I know more women my age, which is old, to be very clear, who like murder mystery podcasts and...
Oh, my wife won't stop watching them. She's been on...
Oh my God.
True crime stuff.
I don't get it. Like, why do you... what is that? Is that something... Is that like a DNA thing that, like... Because I could count... countless people that are into that. Like, what is that? Is that are they turned on by it? Who else?
Do you want me to ask her?
Yeah.
Mally, can I just talk to you for a second, please, for the podcast? Please, can you... I want to ask you a question about what you're watching. Why do you like watching documentaries about killers and murderers?
Well, yeah.
It's not about... It's about what happened and why it happened.
I don't...
What people thinking? Like, man's inhumanity towards man. sort of delving into the dark side of human nature. Is that it?
Does she find it in any way arousing?
Do you find it sexually arousing? No, she's put her headphones back on. She's not listening.
Oh, she will not answer that. That means a yes.
You wanted no part of that conversation.
That is an absolute yes. That did not, I didn't hear you. That's called yes. Yes. That's called my vagina is sopping.
You're sticking a bean under the table.
Yep. That's exactly what that is. Oh boy. Wackos. We're just married to wackos. And we have friends that are wackos. All right. So that's the video game. There was one video game I had for you. So of course we love the vampire. Was it vampire?
Survivors?
Is that it? Okay.
Vampire Survivors, as Arthur calls it.
What does he call it?
Grandpire Survivors.
Grandpa Survivors. No, that's not it. You know what? Take him out in the back. You know, teach him a lesson. 7 hours of push-ups and do squats right now.
Right.
your V's. It's in a similar vein to that, but it's more. You know, well, you know, you just kind of stay in one. What's the word I'm looking for? Not level area, but like in the other one. This new one, I never get what it's. I think it's like Batarang or some shit. Like I forget. If you go on Steam, it's like the second most popular download. You can go like in different areas, if that makes sense. So it's not like just one. Just
phrase. Okay, you can go in different areas, right? You're really telling it to me.
I really am. But you know how like it's for vampires, it's just like this flat, you know, area, and you just kind of go up, down, left, right, whatever, right? This, you go to different terrain, I guess, different levels. I don't know. It's a little bit more. I'll stop talking about it because I'm obviously can't explain. I am an idiot. So yes, it's on Steam. I think it's like the second or third most popular one, and they have a autumn sale right now. So if you want to get involved in that,
okay, yeah. If you remember the name, let me know.
I will. You're not looking. All right, very good. I'll take care of that. All right, yes. Where are we in the world of New Japan Pro Wrestling?
New Japan Pro Wrestling. Let's talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We can do that. We're pros, professionals. Where would you like to start with the New Japan Pro Wrestling?
I don't know, really. What do you think?
All right. That's the show. Good night, everyone. Well, I think we have a show.
So many great things we could talk about. So many interesting directions we could go in. I've been hearing some exciting things about Wrestle Kingdom tickets. People are telling me it's selling extremely well. Some people have said to me they're confident it's going to be a sellout.
Wow. Look at that. Well, I guess there's a lot of disposable income in Japan. Excellent job.
I've heard theories like, well, obviously, this is the Tanahashi retirement doing the heavy lifting. Agreed?
Yes, and we haven't even announced an opponent yet. So yeah, I mean that's I would say that and Wolf are the two things that are pushing that narrative. Absolutely.
Yeah, so maybe it is a case people have saved up their money for this event. And I imagine there's probably a fair bit of crossover interest for general pro-wrest fans who are not necessarily sort of diehard New Japan fans, maybe sort of fans of other promotions, but are aware of the significance of Hiroshi Tanahashi and want to be there for his retirement. I could see that being,
yeah, a fact. I think we underestimate his value in being a guy that people absolutely connect with and want to be a part of the last show. Let me speak for myself. I don't want to lump anyone else into that category. I'll speak for me. Maybe I have underestimated that. I mean, I knew they would do well, and just the name alone and the event and, you know, just being there, I think does that fear of missing out does happen to a lot of people. And you knew it was going to do a good number. Didn't they have a little presser or like a fan meet and greet or some kind of thing.
It did, yeah. I was going to save that for when we're talking specifically about Tanahashi
after
the Adamant's match with Great Okan. So we'll stick a pin in that for now. But I wanted to start off just by sharing that information that, you know, people I speak to really think that, yeah, like genuinely think it's going to be a sellout. So
that's
I don't
news.
Necessarily know if I believe it. Like, that would be staggering to me just by how cold the product feels, but I suppose the point I'm trying to make is that do not underestimate the power of the Tanahashi retirement, because it doesn't matter how crap New Japan is, people are going to turn up for the retirement if nothing else,
right? And I think the proof, that proof is in what you're talking about when it comes to the show. Yeah, I mean, that alone, and again, I think Wolf has something to do with it as well, but yeah. And what's amazing is, Joel, is that we don't even, it's like, they wouldn't do that, but again, anything's possible with New Japan Pro Wrestling, but you would expect it to be a really solid name, like a really interesting thing to have for his last match, but there's no guarantees, is there? Like, there's nothing set in stone. So, I mean, we're going with the idea of that being his last match, no matter who it is or what it looks like or what it entails. That's pretty impressive. That, you know what it is? It's impressive, but it's also a little bit like, oof. Like, I don't think they have anybody else that could even come close to doing it. You know what I mean? Like that's the power of Hiroshi Tanahashi, I guess. So, good for him. Good for him.
Let's get into the show itself then. So, this was Destruction in Kobe. It took place on Sunday, September 28th. First match was Yo El Desperado. Oh, no, first of all, the number, 4,672, which is higher than last year.
Yeah.
Which surprised me. That's a pretty healthy number.
It's not bad. That's actually quite good. I mean, unexpected, for sure. But you know what? When we talked about this, we previewed the show last week. It was, on paper, it wasn't a terrible show. It was pretty good. But even so, like, we were, I think, collectively somewhat skeptical of it being a show that would better in attendance and in assuming monetarily. Best the previous year. That's good news. That's very good news.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to chalk that up to, because last year it was Tetsuya Naito in the main event. It was Naito against Great Okan. So I don't know if this is time for us to start throwing flowers at Ren Narita and declaring.
I was about to say. Yeah, either that or fucking Fale. Don Fale with the title shot is what brought them in. We know that, right? Come on, get off the street with that. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so first match: Yo El Desperado, Yoshihashi, Yuya Uemura, and Shota Umino against Sho, Doki, Dick Togo, Sonata, and Evil. So Yuya got the win with a Frankensteiner on Dick Togo. And What do you want me to say?
I think the two things that came out of that, and no surprise. One is, you know, it looks like your title situation, your junior title situation, is set in stone with Doki and Despy, and you know, a little bit more. And again, we'll get into it later on in the show, I'm sure, but a lot of the focus was a build toward a young lion. Well, they're not young lions. Why am I calling them young lions? Young star tag team in the mix. So those were the two takeaways.
Yeah, Despy backstage was saying that he wants to challenge Sho and Doki for the junior tag titles. He's recruited someone from the Mexican Indies. He's found a partner, a guy called Kukai. So he's going to be teaming with Kukai to challenge for those. And Saitama on October the 11th.
Okay. I mean, we all hand-waved Doki, right? Well, I mean, most of us did at the time. And look at what we got now. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens there.
Match number two.
Yeah, please.
It was Hiroshi Tanahashi Final Road Connection. Hiroshi Tanahashi defeats Great Okan. 7 minutes, 45 seconds via roll-up pin. So the match was okay. It was fine. I think the most interesting thing coming out of this, to me, based on the preview we did, was three singles matches between Tanahashi and Great Okan, and Tanahashi's won all of them. In a time when singles wins over Tanahashi are not exactly hard to come by, I think it's fair to say. Were you surprised that Tanahashi went 3-0 against Great Okan?
In hindsight, maybe. You know, like when you say it out loud like that, it is like, oh my God, that's crazy. Considering I think everybody had him, like, again, 1 out of 3, especially in those early matches, you would have thought. But at this point, no. Because the shine on Okan is there isn't no one. Like he's swimming.
Polish third, Damon.
Yeah, well, he's swimming upstream right now. And again, it's Tanahashi. Why not give him the win? But yeah, I mean, again, you think of all the people that have gotten wins over Hiroshi Tanahashi, and then you wind up losing to him, that kind of tells you where you are.
Does it not kind of beg the question, sort of in kayfabe, why are you retiring if you're able to, you know, go deep in the G1 climax, like nearly make it out of the block, you're able to comfortably beat relatively established names like Great Okan? Like, what are you retiring for, man? You could have another crack at the big one.
Well, right. On paper, you would think that. But then you open your eyes and you look at the match and you're like, oh, that's why. The man can barely walk. That makes sense now. Okay. And that's really what we have. But yeah, I mean, here's the thing. He has everything else. He's got the mental wherewithal to put together a great match. He's got the charisma still. He's got the crowd still. The hair is still immaculate. The weave, the titties. He does have a little bit of titties, but he's proud of those.
In a good way, like good titties.
Yeah. Well, there's not bad titties. There's no such thing. But he has them. Let it be known. But he's got everything else. He just physically is just shot. So if there was like some kind of miracle drug where there probably is. They give it to him right before he leaves the curtain. Painkiller.
Substance. And then a 2004 Hiroshi Tanahashi will emerge out of the spine of 2025.
Yeah. I mean, that would be wonderful if we could do that. If we could, as Cher would sing, if we could turn back time, we can't do that. It's impossible. But yeah, he has everything still except that, and him winning honestly didn't really surprise me. And and here's the thing too: I would think probably maybe you would, if he has more singles matches in him. And I know he's doing the Noah thing too. Was that was a tag situation? That wasn't a singles match. The tournament.
So Kaito Kiyomiya came out to absolutely no reception whatsoever. I couldn't even remember his music. I was like, this kind of sounds familiar. I was like, I should know who this is. I should be excited about it. Then I saw him come out. I was like, oh God, this guy. So yeah, they're going to team up for the Noah show. It was a lot of promotion of Noah on this New Japan show. So this is how partner promotions behave. You promote each other's events on your shows.
It is. We could take somebody could take a lesson in that. So he's going to be doing that.
That's good.
Like he's milking this fucking retirement tour for all it's worth. Good for him. It's hard for me to get angry at something like that. You know, like it's fine. Like, you know, he's on, you know, second match, third matches. He's going to do this tournament. I appreciate the fact that he's going for the money. You know what I mean? Because, you know, in any other world, you'd be like, please stop doing this to yourself. Why are you doing this? But I'm very curious to see what he winds up with when it comes to match totals in this year after the Dome. Like I'm very curious as to where that number will finally fall, because once again, he's been in so many fucking singles matches. It's crazy. His body is – 5-minute matches, man. 5-minute matches.
So, yeah, he did have this presser before Destruction in Kobe, where he announced that he would be having a singles match as his final match, which was interesting to me, because I was wondering if it might do like an all-star tag or something, you know, maybe like – with Naito and Omega and Okada or something. But no, he said it will be a singles match. And we've got a couple of questions here from Doom FPO. He says, what's been worse, Cena's farewell tour or Tanahashi's? Both have devalued the star's power and delivered very few memorable matches. Both deserve better, but Tana as president should be held responsible. And it's clear now that only a Hail Mary slingshot mega match can save Wrestle Kingdom. Do you see any way in which a Nakamura versus Tana Wrestle Kingdom match could happen? Failing that, would anything other than another Okada or Omega match come remotely close to honoring the event? So I agree with the first one. I do think he's just been overexposed, and I'm sure he knew that was going to happen. Like, by having that volume of matches on the last year, simple market economics would dictate that it, there's not exactly much scarcity there, but that's presumably not what he was going for. I think, you know, he had his own philosophical outlook on what this final year should look like, and it was for him to give back as much as he can and work with as many people as possible. And I'm sure he knew that might not, that may sort of reduce the appeal of him as a draw, but I can't really fault him, because he's Hiroshi Tanahashi. He can do what he wants. As I've mentioned earlier, I think the Wrestle Kingdom tickets are looking quite good at the moment. So I disagree that they need some kind of mega match to save it. I think the more interesting question is who we think the retirement opponent will be. Now that he said it is a singles match, there were some comments from Prince Devitt, Finn Balor, saying that he wanted to wrestle Tanahashi. AJ Styles said he wanted to wrestle him, because you guys just talking. And I had heard the Devitt name being mentioned before, but you know, a lot of names have been mentioned, and something they've kept it very, very quiet. No one really knows who it's going to be. I think Nakamura would make sense if they can get him. I think that would be my personal preferred choice in terms of their history and the pageantry and the entrances and everything. I think that would be spectacular, and that would be the direction I'd go. But it's very difficult to say at this point.
It is, and they've done a pretty decent job of keeping it tight-lipped. And trust me, if we find out any more information, that certainly will be shared on the $10 tier. and we will eventually. Like, I think it'll start getting out to the people that we talk to, and then, you know, we can share that. But keep in mind, during this entire year, we've heard names, you know, thrown around. So I'm going to ask not really a dumb question, but more of, I don't watch the product, so I don't fucking know. Is he doing anything in WWE right now? Nakamura, that is?
I have no idea.
I have no idea. I don't hear his name often. Maybe that's a somewhat intentional thing? Maybe? I don't know.
I always say one thing, right? Out of being a horrible person that I am, I really want it to be a WWE wrestler, just to see the more lunatic AEW fans shit their pants completely. Oh, collaborating with WWE, what's going on? Like, that would be extremely funny to me. So I hope it is just anyone from the WWE roster would be very, very funny.
The return of Steve Lombardi.
Steve Blackman.
Oh, well, that's true too. Why not? Let's see that.
Steve Blackman. I love him.
Me too. I actually did enjoy him. Yes, or maybe it might be Bubba Ray Dudley. You know, the guy. You know, he's done everything else in the fucking wrestling world. You know, you would think he was fucking Ric Flair.
He's got the pedigree in the Tokyo Dome as well.
He certainly does.
He certainly does.
That is correct. So he's no stranger to the big bright spotlight of the Tokyo Dome. Imagine that. It's fucking Bubba Ray. I swear to you. I don't know what would happen. I might have to fly out to Tokyo just in time, get on a Concorde or something, or some type of rocket ship, and get over there just to yell profanities. There's no chance in hell that's happening. I think it's, you know what? I don't know who it is, but Nakamura makes a lot of sense. Let's put it that way. Makes a lot of sense. So I think people would dig that. I think people would really enjoy that. Fingers crossed. But it's got, I would think they would be announcing that relatively soon. But the good news is that tickets are already sold. So, you know, I mean, but I don't think that this is necessarily a cash grabby situation. Like, I know they know. And I, when I say they, New Japan knows they can't fuck up that moment. You know what I mean? They can't really under deliver. So I think they're going to do everything they can to make that match special. I think Hiroshi Tanahashi, let's put it this way. The company knows at this point. So we just got to fucking dig a little bit and prod a little bit and poke a little bit. And trust me, we'll get it done. We'll get it done. $10 tier, patreon.com.
The third match was the Never Openweight Championship. Only Bolton defeating Don Farley.
Motherfucker.
5 minutes, 55 seconds by Kamikaze, which is a bit shorter than I thought it was going to go. And I mean, the layout of the match was exactly what I said it was going to be.
It was.
He's getting jumped and he's stepping on his back. Oh, my back. Oh, he's so big. How am I possibly going to defeat the large man? And the finish was quite spectacular. Like the fact that the way he managed to get him up for the Kamikaze was good, but I'm just not sure what we achieved here, given that Oleg has already defeated Bad Luck Fale in the New Japan Cup. So I'm just not really sure what the point of all this was.
I mean, it was just like, let's prolong the idea of him going through the entire House of Torture.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, apparently Evil is next up. Oh, fucking Fale. Joel, what a fucking disgrace. And I texted you while I was watching this.
I love so much. It was the best.
And if you don't mind, I don't have my phone on. Can you read off what I sent, please?
Yes. So, Fale holding himself up to throw punches in the very beginning of the match. Lord help us.
Right. He's doing the old Andre the Giant thing. He's holding on to the rope and he's throwing punches while holding himself in the fucking corner. I don't think we were a minute into the match. I don't think we were a minute into the match and the guy is fucking out of it, right? When he took the first back bump, I thought, if you look at his stomach, it is just heaving in breath, right? He is just... The fact that New Japan put him in a fucking ring, I get it. He's a big guy. He sure is. But that was just so unnecessary. It was terrible. He fucking stinks at this point. It's not like he was great before, but God damn it. He is just a fat piece of shit, and I'm a fat piece of shit. I should not be in a pro wrestling ring challenging for any fucking titles. He is, and I understand he has a little bit more history than I do, but fuck me to put me through that 6 minutes. It's 6 minutes, by the way. I said 11, so that if you were betting at home, the unders were your winner. I can't imagine why I would say anything over 10, because the man would have died in the ring. he would have his heart would have stopped. I don't know what had me think he could go more than 6 minutes, but there you are. Bad Luck Fale. No, I'm sorry. My bad. Don Fale. Donnie Fale. In his workmanlike gear, looking at the lights and all to set up Evil. Good Lord Almighty. Again, what are we doing? So that's that.
Fourth match, IWGP Tag Championship match with the Knockout Brothers. My boys, yeah. Oscar and Yuto Ice defeated the champions Taichi and Tomohiro Ishii. 30 minutes, 30 seconds via KOB. I made no secret of my love for these guys. I think Yuto Ice is great. He's just brimming with confidence and charisma, and I said before, he's got all the charisma that I think a lot of his peers are lacking. So he might not be the best bell-to-bell guy, and he might not have the matinee good looks and the body and all that, but I think he just has complete belief and authenticity with the gimmick as this guy from the wrong side of the tracks who's had a bit of a rough upbringing. And I know the gimmick might come across as a bit cheesy to a Western audience, but I think I hope this doesn't sound patronizing, but I think to the Japanese fan base, that comes across as quite cool. I think that, you know, part of the Yankee subculture and all that, I think he's a guy that people are going to vibe with, especially kids. I think kids are going to love him. And I said to you over text that he sort of reminds me of early John Cena, Ruthless Aggression John Cena. But yeah, I'm sure he's going to be going on to really good things in the company just by the way that he carries himself. And you know, I hear sort of backstage he's doing all the right things as well and endearing himself and working hard and soliciting advice and all that stuff. So that's really encouraging. I thought the match was great, really dynamic. He showed a lot of fire, like the sequences between him and Ishii were tremendous. And I was also really impressed with Oscar, who to me, I think, has already eclipsed Hikuleo.
Yes.
I think he's a fair sort of comparison as a big man, with just sort of the snap and the dynamism with which he carries himself, and his striking is really good as well. And the way he works to his size and does some really interesting things with sort of the mixing up of levels, like working with a shorter opponent and coming up with some really interesting moves and sequences as a result of that. And to me, like, the gold standard for working as a big man is Lance Archer. So Oscar should be sitting down watching Lance Archer tapes, getting on the phone to Lance Archer and learning as much as he can to carry himself like a monster. But for the first outing, like his first big match here, I thought it was really great, really, really encouraged by both of them. And yeah, more so by Oscar. I think Yuta Ice has the highest ceiling, but I was really pleasantly surprised with what Oscar did in this match too.
I agree. It was probably their biggest spotlight to date. I think they did well. I think they had good dance partners to help with that. But truth be told, I think they held their own. Like, they didn't feel out of place or lost or, you didn't get the sense that they needed a lot of hand holding in the match itself. So that was also an encouraging situation. Again, the gimmick is. You know, it's not my favorite. It's going to take me a while to warm up to it. I'll be brutally honest with you. That being said, I think I do kind of like the idea of him being like a little bit small is not the word, but maybe undersized for, like, you know, the big monster and the small kind of yappy guy. You know, like, I do
he's,
like
he's that. A little bulldog, isn't he?
Yes, yes, yes. I do like that dynamic. I do like that. But yeah, I mean, look, the good news is that what we're seeing from them right now, they're only going to get better. They're only going to improve. So yeah, I mean, look, we've seen plenty of times where guys have debuted or guys have been put in a situation and they haven't made the most of it. And they have dropped the ball. And they've been given the ball more than once. And you're just kind of like, come on. You know, you're getting these opportunities, and but these guys, it doesn't seem like much was handed to them. They've made this their own, and it's you know, beginning stages. So I am kind of interested in how this blossoms and grows. I do like the fact that they, you know, said, all right, fuck it, you got the belts, boys. See what you can do with them. And you're right. The Hikuleo comparisons is a great one, in the sense of, yes, similar size, similar stature, that kind of shit. But also, you know, it is kind of like, all right, so what have you done with it? And you know, I think by leaps and bounds right now. Like, and how long did we have to look at Hikuleo? How long? How many opportunities? How long were we like, oh my God, he's a monster and he could be great. And, you know, and I don't think anybody was that upset in him leaving, and him leaving has been, you know, a non-factor completely. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah, he didn't have that dog in him, did he?
No, he really didn't. And here's the thing. You can see that, like, you can feel that. So look, again, is the gimmick for me? Probably not. But I am very happy with what I've seen so far. And I'm actually kind of excited to see what they can do. And I think I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're going to be joined at the hip for the rest of their lives. But like, I am curious to see where they go. Like, and I want to see how this plays out. Like, I want to see them make something of these titles and make them interesting and make them their own and have solid feuds. And then, you know, see what happens in a singles way. And I'm sure, you know, like I said, they'll be, I don't necessarily think they're going to be joined at the hip for the rest of their lives, but I could see them, you know, playing off each other, whether they join a faction together or whether they form their own. Who knows? I mean, again, I'm very impressed by what I've seen so far, and I think they can only get better.
Andrew says, why is the tag division only good when the rest of the company is being booked like shit? And
yeah
I am probably more excited by the heavyweight tag division than I have a lot of the other divisions in New Japan right now, which is a damning indictment upon how the rest of the company is being booked. But yeah, this is exciting. The fact that they strap them up straight away, which is, I found quite surprising. And seeing them paired up with Yuya and Shota for the upcoming tour. I like that. That's good. I think the matches will be really nice there. There's a lot of history between Yuto and Yuya. So Yuto's cut really good promos about how Yuya broke his shoulder in his debut match and how he's never going to forgive him for that. And he can't, or was it his elbow? I can't remember. He can't flex his arm all the way because of what Yuya did to him. So we've got a nice bit of spice to that one. So I'm looking forward to that. And Taichi and Ishii, I think they'll be back too. So I think with those three teams, if the next sort of 4 months of the division is booked around them, then I think there's a lot to be excited by. I think there could be some really good combinations there. Roll on World Tag League. I can't wait, David.
Let's go. We're doing shows this year. That's right. Is that what you're saying? Is that
daily audio. Daily World Tag League audio.
Oh, fuck me. All right. But yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with whoever made that statement, that comment of, you know, it does feel like when the tag team division's a little, even lukewarm, it's like the other divisions kind of suffer a little bit. But yeah, it is. I look, if you're looking for good stuff, I think now jump on board with the tag stuff. I think it's going to be good.
Fifth match was the GHC Junior Heavy Championship match where the 59th champion, Hiromu Takahashi, defeated the challenger, Taiji Shimori, 11 minutes and 30 seconds via time bomb. I mean, this was everything that I've been asking for in the last episode, wasn't it? I wanted, you know, fourth from the top, junior heavyweight title match with juniors working like juniors. And I said I feared that we'd just get the standard Ishimori match where he's ramming the opponent's shoulder into the ring post and working over the shoulder. And he did do that, but he did loads of cool flips to start with. So it was like we got to eat our dessert before we had to sit down and eat our vegetables. But I thought it was paced really well. I thought Ishimori was working tremendously hard. He was doing stuff that I thought he was just never going to do again as a wrestler. So I can't fault the effort. It was short, it was exciting, and yeah, this is exactly the sort of junior heavyweight match I want to see on big shows like this that the cowardly El Desperado won't do because he wants to have 25 minute epics at Corcoran Hall. He's too scared to be on the big shows.
Well, he's probably also, well, you know, I was gonna say he's probably so banged up, but you know, we're talking about the same guy. You know, next week he'll probably be jumping through some fucking glass table barbed wire nonsense.
It might well be because there's Taiji Ishimori gets even more ridiculous. Superhuman Taiji Ishimori gets even more ridiculous next Tuesday. So I dare say we might see Despy making an appearance there. Who knows?
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, you're right. I mean, look, our biggest complaint was last week that this was a match that quite possibly could be paint by numbers. We've seen it a lot in our years. And what more could they possibly do? Now, I'm not saying this, they went out there and revolutionized the fucking sport, but I think what they did was they knew the show and all, and what that match for me at least did was give a little bit of energy and a little spike, like a little bit of, you know, I think if this match were later in the show, I would probably be a little bit more negative toward it, just because it would be like, all right, again, you know. But I think the placement of it helped, and I think the way that they decided to work the match was pretty solid. I mean, look, they're incredibly talented pro wrestlers. As our biggest complaints is another filet mignon. And again, we're not saying that they're fucking filet mignon, but you know, you get my point. They're very good. They're incredibly talented. They work well together. It was just a case of I just didn't want to see the samesies. And to a certain degree, they did. But I think it was a nice little jolt, perfectly placed on the card to help you. And it wasn't like it was bad up until here. It wasn't. It was quite good, actually. I was actually enjoying it. And I think this match complemented the pace of the show, which I think is very important.
Yeah, that's what I did not want was a 25-minute match of junior heavyweights working like heavyweights.
Right.
And they didn't do that. They worked like juniors in a fast-paced match that didn't outstay its welcome and was different to everything else on the show. So that's all I want. I'm a simple man.
I'm totally with you. And it didn't feel like they were doing shit to do shit. Like you can go extreme. And that's the problem, I think, a lot, is that either you get super goofy junior heavyweight, flippy-do, nothing makes sense, we're just doing moves to do moves, we're kicking out of everything, or you get, I want to work like a heavyweight. And there is no middle ground. And I think this was one of the more, the better middle ground matches, which, again, was kind of refreshing.
The sixth match was does anyone care? Ata came out and attacked Hiromu after the match, and they're going to wrestle for the match. No, I mean, good for them. Fine. Not that interested in it, but it's nice to see promotions collaborating, I suppose.
A lot of Noah. Yeah, I mean, does that surprise you at all that we're kicking those tires again?
A little bit. The level of Noah promotion on this show was, I don't want to say excessive, but surprising.
Yeah. Like, I wonder what has brought that about. Like, what was the catalyst to that? Because I heard rumors, but not from anybody that I would super duper trust. And I can tell you later who, if you care, but and trust me, I do not believe it is true. This is not a pastrami sandwich by any stretch of the imagination. But I heard there was some interest from New Japan Pro Wrestling in Noah. Have you heard anything confirming that?
What do you mean? Like buying the promotion?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Like Cyberfight that own Noah, like they're richer than Bushiroad are, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely, but I don't know if they necessarily give a shit about the pro wrestling assets.
I like there being different wrestling promotions. I would not
me too.
Welcome Bushiroad acquiring Noah and merging them or anything like that.
Okay, and I'm with you in that. That's why I brought it up here because I don't think it's a thing that is happening. But let's put it this way. I think there's enough people with raised eyebrows that are kind of like, okay, what's this all about? And like, it might be a fucking thing, you know, whatever. But I thought it was interesting that all of this kind of came about kind of under the table a little bit. I know Hiromu hopping over, winning the title, and we would assume that he's losing it again. But just little drips and drabs of it. I'll be truthful. And Hiroshi Tanahashi doing the tourney. I just think it's a pretty interesting thing that's happening, and the fact that there is this collaboration that's going on. I don't know how it's going to last. But yeah, like when the person brought it up, I really didn't think it was a possibility. But I don't know. I kind of thought about it a little bit, and I still didn't think it was a thing. So good. I we're on the same page.
Okay, then the next match was the sixth match special singles match. Yota Tsuji defeated David Finlay, 40 minutes, 35 seconds by Gene Blaster. And this was my match of the night. I thought this was excellent. And I think they've got really good chemistry. And what I think is particularly enjoyable about when these two wrestle each other, and I think is a feature of David Finlay matches, is it's never the same match. Like, they're never sort of recycling, doing sort of cookie cutter, same spots, or sort of taking turns to do moves to each other, or you do your stuff and I do my stuff. It always looks like an organic fight and a struggle between two guys kind of trying to counter and reverse each other's things. Like, it never looks like just guys taking turns to do moves on each other. And I thought that really came across here and was kind of, I think this might be my favorite match that they've had. Obviously they've had bigger matches on bigger stages, but again, we see the selflessness of David Finlay in play, where he can just make anyone look brilliant. And there were just some tremendous hard hitting spots with that sort of typical Finlay flailing style, where it just looks really dangerous and borderline out of control. And Tsuji came away from it looking really good, and I'm sure he's going to be going on to exciting things, as we'll talk about later in the show. It left me wondering, like, what's next for Finlay? Because they teased the little handshake afterwards, and Finlay ignored that, so it makes you think, huh, you know, is there something brewing there? But Finlay, a guy who's just, aside from winning the New Japan Cup, has just eaten shit all year. I would love to see him get his flowers at some point, because he's such a great worker. And look, maybe this is it. Maybe this is his lot in New Japan, to just be a gatekeeper and make the top guys look good. But I will never miss out the opportunity to praise David Finlay, because I think he's an outstanding wrestler. He's just lacks that tip-top charisma to be a big star. And great match. Enjoyed it a lot.
I think he is the most undervalued guy on that roster. Still, even though he's, you know, kind of at the top, I think he's, you said a word, selfless, and I have to agree 1,000%. I think he has a creative and strong pro wrestling mind. I think the biggest, two biggest things is, one, like, he needs a clean start, and he needs a fresh start. Something completely outside of Bullet Club, white guy heel thing. I think he is one of these guys that unfortunately has been, he was a guy coming up through the ranks in New Japan Pro Wrestling when a lot of people were sinking their teeth into this product. And that's cool. But I think he just has this fucking stigma on him, this stink, if you will, of, oh, he's not a guy because blah, blah, blah. And he's not this, he had to follow guys that people were really super duper passionate about. And like, for him to step away from Bullet Club, for him to kind of do something completely different. And even though he's made that his own, like, he's become his own, like, he's built that up so well, he needs to step away from it. That, or, you know, is New Japan his thing? And I really, really strongly feel like he is a top guy that just is undervalued. Like, and the best, not just because he lost every fucking opportunity at the big boy belt, and not because, you know, he's on a losing streak, but, like, doesn't he feel like the modern day Hirooki Goto, where he's underappreciated, undervalued, always brings it, always has a fucking great match, and maybe the matches aren't at, like, the 950,000 star level, but they're still great pro wrestling matches. And I just feel like he is so underappreciated, it hurts. And I don't know, I'm kind of spitballing things out there, like, how do you make him a guy? How do you turn the tide? And I honestly think it's the stink of Bullet Club, and the stink of, I was a young guy and I had to fight my way up and people don't take me seriously, which I find ludicrous, because there's countless guys you can say that. And I just don't, man, again, once people have a fucking idea and fucking lock you into a spot, it is so difficult as a pro wrestler to get out of that. I don't know. I don't know. Like, he's a stud. And I just think that this promotion misses the mark a lot with him.
I think by virtue of being leader of the Bullet Club, he's always going to be compared unfavorably to guys like Devitt and AJ and Kenny Omega and Jay White. So,
but look at that list, though. You know what I mean? Right, like, yeah, this is a hell of a list.
Some all-time greats there. So, he is a great wrestler in his own right, but you know that's the nature of the game. They gave him the Bullet Club leadership, so that's whom he is going to be compared with. So yeah, I agree. Like, maybe he'd be better off doing something different. Maybe we'll do something different. I don't know, but it's an interesting direction with the little handshake thing they tease with Tsuji. So I don't know what's going to be next for Finlay. But Yota Tsuji, for his part, he went on to challenge Gabe Kidd for the white belt, and you know, we'll talk about Gabe Kidd later. But Tsuji brought up something post-match that a few other guys brought up as well, and it was just very strange to me that they all started talking about this at the same time, and it was something that had not been mentioned previously, to the point at which like it came out of nowhere, so much so that it makes me feel like there's been a change in plans, like something has happened where maybe a match they thought they were going to be able to do at Wrestle Kingdom, they're not able to do anymore. So they're all talking now about winning the global title, the white belt, and going into Wrestle Kingdom as the global champion and challenging the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion and presumably doing some sort of unification match, doing another double gold dash. So many of them were talking about it that it made me think, whoa, why are you suddenly talking about this? And usually if they're going to do something like that, it would be sort of trickled in long term. They would have been talking about it for a while. So maybe it's guys just saying things. I don't know. I don't think this is necessarily like nailed on, we're doing title versus title of Wrestle Kingdom, but there were enough of the wrestlers talking about it that made me think, huh, what you're doing, what now, where has this come from? So it did make me wonder about what the next few months look like for Yota Tsuji, because he's getting the rematch with Gabe Kidd and they're having their trilogy, and potentially, if there is some truth to what these guys are chatting about, possibly if he does beat Gabe Kidd, going on to main event Wrestle Kingdom. So we could be in a world where, hypothetically, if the matches go this way, it's global champion Yota Tsuji versus world champion Konosuke Takeshita in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom. And whatever you might think about the double gold thing and it being stupid and how, what a mess it ended up in the last time, and you know, how do you decouple the secondary title, or do you even bother doing that, and do you need to then introduce a new secondary title with a white belt? And Yota Tsuji says he's going to bring back the V4 title and all that stuff. I like the idea of Tsuji and Takeshita in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom. Just taking that idea in isolation, whatever road you take to get there and whatever title is on the line, that as the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, I really like.
I do too. And I think there are a ton of people that thought from the jump that I don't know how we would get there, but that's where we should be. And again, I'm not even going to get into the idea of the fucking global title and the fucking unification. Like, that's just one of those things where it's just like, we'll tackle that later and pretend and hope that listen, if they're going to do that match, then they almost have to do something similar to what you described. I just think it's kind of laughable at this point when it comes to, you know, that global title, but okay, let's just put that to fucking rest. The idea of them main eventing, headlining, title match, your two biggest stars that you're hoping that you're banking on, so to speak. Yeah. I mean, you have to do that. And here's the thing too. I think it's a great spot because they don't have to be like, you want them to be, but there is not that normal everyday main event Tokyo Dome pressure that they will feel. Like, there will still be plenty of pressure, and they have to have a very, very good match. They have to. But once again, a lot of people are there for Tanahashi. You want that main event. You need that main event. You pray for a really solid fucking match. But there is a little bit to be said about that pressure being taken off a little bit for those two guys. I like that. I like that a lot, actually, now that I'm thinking of it. I don't care what the fuck they do with the titles, to be honest. You know what I mean? The white belt they can throw in the fucking garbage. Who cares?
Right, that would just be window dressing, wouldn't it?
It well, sure would. It sure would. I think that's exactly where they got to go. I think that's exactly where they got to go. And again, if they're going to do that, it's got to be title for title. And we can stop pretending that fucking global title is anything important.
It should be. I mean, it's a shame.
It should be.
Because there have been some really good reigns. I think Finlay did really good work with it. Tsuji's reign wasn't quite long enough to be meaningful in any way. But again, I'm not going to die on that hill. I'm not going to be like weeping saying, oh, the global title. What would it mean? Like, who cares at the end of the day? Because if that is our main event, I don't think it matters who wins or loses that. I think the only thing that would matter then, if they're following a big emotional, spectacular Tanahashi retirement, is that they go out there and have a match of the year candidate. They need to go and have a killer match that everyone is talking about, that everyone say, you need to watch this fucking match. And it doesn't matter who wins or loses. Like Wrestle Kingdom 11, no one cared that Kenny Omega lost that match. It made him into a star.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And on that roster, those are two guys that you can trust, I would think. And they're your future. Yeah, that's it right there. Boom. And I don't give a shit. Like you said, I don't give a shit what they do with the fucking white title. Who gives a shit? I just don't want 6 months from now, this new fucking blue belt. You know, like enough with the fucking titles. I really, they have too many titles, and that's a big problem. I don't know why they always get rid of the second in the pecking order. Like there are plenty others that I would rather see, but okay, whatever. However it gets us there, I'm fine with, and whatever they do with that fucking global title, whatever. But yes, that is what we need for Wrestle Kingdom.
Seventh match, IWGP Global Heavyweight Championship match. Gabe Kidd successfully defending against the challenger Shingo Takagi. 21 minutes, 37 seconds, drill a hole pile driver. And it was a really good match, right? They both worked extremely hard and they ticked all the boxes and did everything that we expected them to do. And commentary were working really hard to put over Gabe Kidd and emphasize the point that he still loves New Japan and he's still serious about the promotion, and that, you know, he was just going to AEW because he likes to fight and, you know, gets money on the side. They did a better job making that make sense than Gabe did. So I wish Gabe had spoken to someone like Chris Charlton and been like, Chris, help me out here. How can I spin this? How can I make this make sense? Because they did a very good job at that. To me, like, the rose is still off the bloom because I still don't think he's going to be in New Japan for much longer. But I just hope they had a really good match and didn't do any AEW shit. And they didn't. So I have to applaud them for that. It is still hard for me to get invested in the matches on an emotional level for all the reasons that I've just laid out. And a little bit tropey, a bit heavy-handed with the fighting spirit spots and the, you know, popping up after you've been dropped on your head with a poison rana to do a load more moves, and a bit kind of my turn, your turn sort of wrestling in a way that Finlay Tsuji wasn't. But I mean, it did appeal to the lizard part of my brain, and, you know, it was very much a Gabe match, very much a Shingo match. Table spot was pretty spectacular. They beat each other up. I mean, you couldn't really ask for much more here.
Yeah. I thought they went out and decided to have a fucking car crash / hit me as hard as you can kind of match in safe spots. One thing I'll point out is fucking, you know, there's a big difference between Gabe Kidd now and Gabe Kidd months ago. You know, he goes out into the crowd and nobody. And like, nobody's getting out of those seats. They're just kind of sticking their hand out while sitting in the chair. Yeah, it didn't really have the impact that I thought. Well, I was kind of hoping for that kind of impact, to be quite frank. But but to give credit where credit is due, I thought both guys really went out there and said, "Okay, let's have a hard hitting pro wrestling match." I enjoyed it. It was if not my favorite, it was, you know, neck and neck with two. You know, I think Finley Tsuji was very good. Look, there's, I think there are a lot of people that feel the same way as you do, in the sense that, like, you're not going to get emotionally invested in this until there is some glimmer of hope that that's not going to fall apart. And right now it doesn't feel that way, but okay. Can we just take a pro wrestling match for the moment and fall in love with it? We can, but we don't want to do just that. We really don't. And I think Gabe has lost a lot of the steam that he built up, and you could feel it in the crowd. It felt like, now the match, I will also give them credit. If I did feel that way, I felt like the match had plenty of opportunity, and they did take advantage of building that feeling again for Gabe. But Gabe is hot. I think Shingo did great too. I really did. I thought he was really fucking outstanding. I mean, he's gotten titles. He's done everything that's been asked of him. He's one of the best pickups New Japan has had in the past 10 years. Yeah. I mean, Gabe is Gabe, and Shingo is Shingo. They will. You're not going to doubt the effort in the ring. Like, when the bell rings, they go. Everything outside the ring, can you hand wave? Can you eye roll? Of course. But inside the ring, I really feel like those are two guys that absolutely, every time they go out there, give 1,000%. And I can't fault them for that, and I appreciate that.
We got a question from Matt. He says, could the vibes around Konosuke Takeshita and Gabe Kidd be fixed if they just lent into being Invader heels? I do think, like, that will be the fix for me to get emotionally invested in Gabe, as if he just leans fully into the AEW stuff and be like, I'm going to win this title, take it over to Tony Khan, where I'm going to get paid properly, and fuck all you idiot marks. Like, then I'd be like, boo! And I'd be cheering like tooth and nail, like, for whoever it would be wrestling against him. And I think they could do some interesting stuff there, like having a feud with Finlay or something, where Finlay becomes the de facto babyface and Gabe is the heel. But I don't think they're going to do that at this point, because, yeah, as they've shown so far, they're happy with the Gabe Kidd character as it is. So who am I to suggest otherwise? But yeah, I do think presenting them as Invader heels would be a benefit for both wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have a problem with that. Yeah, I don't think it'll happen, but yeah. I mean, look, if we're going to get our heart broken, we might as well get our, you know, hold our hands while you're breaking our heart, I guess, right? You know,
that's take what us progress on. Is all about, isn't it? Like, it is. Lean into the, take that kernel of truth and build the story around it. Lean into that and extract that for the maximum amount of drama that you can.
Right. But now, and vice versa. The fact that we're leaning into the polar opposite of that, of, oh, I'm New Japan and there's in my blood and blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah, okay, dude. That's where the problem lies. So, yeah. I don't think anybody would complain about that. I think people would enjoy that. Leaning into the pro AEW, this is where I'm getting the bag and all that shit. But they won't do that. They won't do that.
I was just about to say something. I can't remember what it is now.
you're getting my dementia, my Alzheimer's.
Oh, dear. Right, so main event then, eighth match, IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match. Zack Sabre Jr. defending successfully against Ren Narita, 29 minutes, 24 seconds via Zack Driver. So a very interesting match and quite a contentious one, because I like to keep it on the Super J-Cast Discord during and after these things. And I saw a lot of praise from Ren, a lot of praise from Ren from Fraser as well, who was there live. And I don't know. I really want to like Ren Narita, and I have been a Ren Narita defender. I didn't see in this match what all those people saw. I saw a good performance, but I didn't see anything from Ren that has changed my mind about him. What I see from Ren is a talented wrestler. He's very technically proficient and can go when he gets a tap on the shoulder with Zack Sabre Jr. He can have a great match with Zack. I'm not questioning that, but right. lacks the charisma and has lost that. He had it. There were a couple of moments in the closing stretch where he brought back a touch of that explosiveness that I found so exciting about him when he was on his excursion in the States in Strong. There were just a couple of moments, a little couple of counters down the stretch where I was like, whoa, yes, that's the Ren Narita I like. But there was not enough. Like, I want to see Ren have great matches with guys who are not Zack Sabre Jr. before I'm ready to start saying, yeah, we're turning a corner with him. But just because he's too inconsistent. And, you know, watch it. The G1 climax is the great revealer, because then you're working with 9 other wrestlers, 9 singles matches, and it lays it all bare, like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And
it really is.
G1 climax, yeah. It was disappointing. I thought Ren was poor. He had good moments, but he was just inconsistent, and I didn't see enough to make me think, yeah, this guy deserves a push. And coming out of this match, I thought, yeah, it was good. It was an enjoyable main event, nice little technical match, a couple of cool moments in the closing stretch, but I didn't come away with it thinking like, yeah, Ren is redeemed. We've got to push this guy. I was like, yeah, okay, you were a competent challenger of the month. Now get to the back of the line. It's going to be a while before you're sniffing a world title match again anytime soon. And I think for me, the most compelling part of the first 3 quarters of the match was the work that Zack did. I don't think I would go so far as to call it a Zack carry job, but to me, it was pretty obvious that he was leading the match and guiding Ren throughout it, as was the case in their G1 match. So I think that a lot of the stuff I enjoyed about it was down to Zack. I saw people with some criticisms about the way that Zack was carrying himself, like the sort of heel face dynamics. I didn't have a problem with that. I didn't think there needed to be heel face dynamics. I think it's perfectly fine for Zack to be the prick world champion who thinks Ren is dog shit, and he said as much in the presser. To me, that can also coexist with Ren being a cheating heel from House of Torture. I don't think there was a need to change the presentation or the dynamics in any way. I thought those things were fine. And I thought the way the match played out was very interesting in that regard, where they're, you know, Ren is sort of holding his own in terms of the grappling, the technical stuff and the submission stuff. And he had Zack on the ropes a few times and nearly submitted him. And I found Zack selling quite good. I know other people seem to think otherwise, but yeah, I thought it was a good match, not a great match, and one that has maybe alleviated some doubts I had about Ren Narita, but I think he needs to now build on this and have good matches with other wrestlers as well.
Well, yeah. I think over a year's worth of working the way that he has with the House of Torture stuff, you know, everybody had their doubts. And once again, this kind of goes back to why House of Torture is such a sore spot, in the sense of you have a guy that you put him in the ring with Zack. And again, you put him in the ring with Zack, I would hope lots of people would have a great match. But I think a lot of people were questioning, based off of his output, you know, and how would that translate into this match? I thought he did very well. I think Ren did better than even I expected, to be quite honest. Again, was it a world-class performance? No. Was it something where it felt like, as you described, Zack kind of leading the way, so to speak? Yeah, it did. But that's okay, because, you know, you could fumble that. You could still fuck that up. And what it did do, though, it did give me a little bit more confidence in Ren. And it did give me a little glimmer of hope of, okay, He does have it in him, and if necessary, he could get a tap on the shoulder, and if necessary, he could have a match that was very good. I thought the match was very good. I thought really people were complaining about Zach selling. What was the problem with Zach selling, for crying out loud? All these people with the fucking selling. What was the problem here?
I don't know that he wasn't screaming enough, I suppose.
Oh, all right. Fine. All right. I thought Zach did very well. I thought Zach did, considering the fact that I think a lot of us were going into this match a little bit, you know, a little hesitant. I thought we did. We came out of it pretty good. Were there any points at any time did you feel, oh my God? Like there was one time when we're working over Zach's leg, and then a leg gave out or something happened to a leg, and there was a near fall, and then there were a couple. How about that one sequence toward the end where it was a lot of reverse? I thought that was very good.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. It was really good, but it kind of started cooking, and then it was over, and I was like, "Oh,
that's the thing."
I was enjoying that.
Yep. Well, I'll be brutally honest with you. So it was cooking, and I don't know what to. I think it was. Well, I was watching it in the middle of the day, so I was probably doing something for work, and I looked away from the screen for a second, and then the pitfall happened, and I was like, "Well, got to fucking rewind that." Yeah, it did kind of come out of nowhere. I was kind of hoping it could cook a little bit, as the kids would say, because I thought it was building toward it. It was moving that way. Did we have House of Torture interference? Yes, we knew that. Whether was that a little bit of smoke and mirrors? Yep, absolutely. Speaking of smoke and mirrors, let's go back real quick to Fale's match, because I love fucking kicking him when he's down. Holy shit, how many, like so many, while he's sucking wind on the ground, Evil's got to get involved. Dick Togo's got, like, there were so many people that had to take all the work for the fucking Fale.
While Yujiro's coming ringside with an oxygen mask for Fale.
Right, seriously. No joke. Oh my God, I can't believe I had to bring it up. But yes. But no, I thought the match was better than even I expected. How about that? And at the very least, it gave me some hope for Ren in the near future. Hopefully getting rid of the shackles. Getting out of that House of Torture stuff, it's the gimmick. I think I truly believe he can go. I truly believe if given the opportunity, he could go. It's the fucking gimmick, kids. We all know that.
I think it's interesting to compare wrestlers within House of Torture and the effort and the creativity they put in, because I would look at guys like Evil and Doki, who I think, again, we've not seen a huge amount, so it's a small sample size from Doki, but based on the junior tag match that I saw, those are guys who I think still put in the effort and try to do interesting and creative things within the context of the gimmick, where I see from all the others, like Sho and mostly Ren and Yujiro and everyone else, they just seem lazy to me. Like Sho looks like a guy who's just completely checked out.
Yeah.
So whilst, yeah, the gimmick is not great, I think there are sort of levels within the faction itself where you can see some guys trying to make it work and some guys who've just like thrown their hands up and been like, ah, whatever, I'll just phone it in.
Well, it's very easy to do. I mean, Yujiro, though, is 107 years old, you know, and he's just living the life, you know. Sho is the one disappointment in that. What you rattled off there. Sho was probably the biggest disappointment, because you're right. It does feel like it's like this. It doesn't. I feel like he's leaned so hard into the gimmick that the gimmick has become him. But yeah, I mean, also I will also say that at least in Evil's case, he has had a plethora of experience. And he does feel like a creative thought kind of guy, in the sense of, okay, how can I make this better? How can we work this? And yes, House of Torture being the thing that seems to, and that style seeming to be a thing that bogs people down. again, I think that the match gave me a glimmer of hope for Ren. So I think that's a positive. And then, and again, Zach is Zach. So we're happy for that.
Nathan says, now, first thoughts from watching the show, great gate. At the start, the crowd was hyped and loud, seemed to be there for an epic New Japan event. As the night went on, I thought they were more and more disengaged and by the end completely disconnected. Am I wrong here? Did you feel the crowd sort of checking out towards the end of the show?
I swear to you, it felt like in the beginning of that Gabe Kidd match, and I don't think I'm just projecting this, like there were just people with their arms crossed, like just staring.
Was it Gabe Kidd doing the crawling down the ramp where they were just
that was pathetic, wasn't it?
Not into this.
No. Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't know what the fuck. Oh, he's a dog. Oh, okay. I felt like they were into it at the end with the look. Nobody who bought a ticket thought that they were seeing a title change that night. I can't imagine anyone going into that building thinking, yep, this is Ren Narita's night. Now, again, New Japan is a wacky place and weird things can happen. But, you know, I think that hurts. But I think the crowd was okay. I didn't – it wasn't super noticeable of a complete dip. And I thought it built during the Zach match. But maybe I'm seeing different things than other people.
And then afterwards, Konosuke Takeshita did not come out to challenge, but their match, where his match with Zach is official for King of Pro Wrestling. And we have another question here from Doom FPL. It says, devaluing the G1 by having the winner main event a lesser show is one of the most insulting trends of recent NJPW. Is there another way, short of Ghetto and the booking team literally dropping trousers in the ring and defecating with the line mark, that his company would sink lower?
Nope, that's it. That's what we got to do. That's the answer. Look, I'm going to say something that people might not like. It's pro wrestling. You know what I mean? It's, you know, they're going to do things that soil history. I mean, look, people were losing their fucking skulls when we changed up the title, the fucking big boy belt. And you know, people were like, what, losing their mind? The G1. G1 wasn't always a guarantee to that you were headlining the Dome. That was a recent thing. So there's not this like long lineage of that. I liked it, but the company is trying to do the opposite of what you said. And instead of devaluing the main event at Wrestle Kingdom, they're trying to get another show to get some extra juice and get some extra steam and get some extra eyeballs. Do I particularly like it? No. I like the idea of you win that tournament, you've made it. Not only do you get this nice little trophy and you get to wave a flag, you get to main event the biggest show of the year. And I can kind of see the idea of, if I'm a wrestler, I don't give a fuck when this fucking match occurs, just as long as I get it. Look, they have a lot of things that they need to do. How many weeks have we come on here and be like, well, they got to fucking do something soon, Joel?
That was one thing I was going to say. Like, coming out of this show, we were hoping that some of the stuff that Fraser promised us they had to do between now and Wrestle Kingdom would have been done. They've done none of those things, have they?
No, they have not. Not yet. So there is a long, winding road to get to Wrestle Kingdom. And they have to cram a ton of shit in. It's October 1st, kids. I think if we all sit here and say, okay, we have an idea of what the main event is, we have an idea of, you know, Tanahashi, we have an idea of Aaron Wolf, the rest is kind of in the air. I mean, we have little drips and drabs, but it's kind of in the air. They got to get there. So yeah, I get it. I get the idea of the G1 winner getting that. But I guess at the very end of the day, it's the G1 winner gets to pick whatever the fuck they want that title shot. And, you know, they're trying to, like in kayfabe, they're going to do it whenever they can. And in New Japan businessy world, it's, hey, we need to fucking pop another show. If we can squeeze an extra 1,000 people, great. And then we already know the Dome is going to do well. So we just got to fucking get that long, windy road to the Dome to kind of get the storylines and everybody's matches together.
Right. Like having the G1 winner challenge at Wrestle Kingdom is not in and of itself inherently good. It's about the booking and the creative decisions and the storytelling around it. And I think there are ways you can tell exciting and creative stories to get to the main event of Wrestle Kingdom with that structure in place. And there are ways to tell interesting, exciting, creative stories to get to the Wrestle Kingdom main event without that structure in place. I think people are sort of too fixated on that being what makes the build good or bad, because it's not. It's just, can you tell a good story? That's all.
Yeah. I mean, again, the frustration that I feel is in that question is more to do with the fact that there hasn't been shit done to and we're 2 months away. That's the bigger problem, right? It's not the fact that, oh, they're devaluing G1. It's more of, okay, it was an easier way. This was already established now. So you didn't have to worry about how are we getting from point A to point B. And again, as I said before, not to beat the dead horse, but they're trying to make other shows pretty important to pop a house. That's really it.
So now, before we go, let's preview some of the upcoming stuff, because we are now on the road to King of Pro Wrestling. And that road to Damon begins this Saturday.
Oh. Yeah.
October the 4th in Kanagawa. There's not really anything interesting happening on that show, so I'm going to skip that one. I'm not going to talk about that. The show this Monday is an interesting one. So Monday, October 6th in Korakuen Hall. And of course, Damon, it is a Road 2 show. It's at Korakuen Hall. Guess who's main eventing?
Honma.
No, who loves Korakuen Hall main events more than anything else? That go 25 minutes and the same things happen in all of them.
What? Hiroshi Tanahashi?
No, it's our boy El Desperado.
Oh, Despy, he does love that quirk and all. Main event, no stipulations in this.
I notice, the junior heavyweight championship match, El Desperado against Doki.
Yeah, I was hoping that, you know, we'll bring out like a bull rope match or fucking, you know, they'll finally have that New Japan scaffold match we've all been clamoring for.
Michinoku on a pole match.
Yeah. That's a weird spot, don't you think? Like, we're coming off the Dome.
That's what he does. He's when Despy's got creative control, that's what he does. It's Korakuen Hall, main events, 25 minutes, working like heavyweights. Let's go.
Well, I'll give you the flip side of that coin. They were a big featured match at the Tokyo Egg Dome. Seems like we could have had that match somewhere else, but what do I know?
I was livid when I saw that when it was announced, and I saw it was on the road to at Korakuen Hall. I was like, "Fuck off!" This was one of the most matches I was looking forward to the most at Wrestle Kingdom, with all that, you know, the pageantry, the Kabuki actor entrance, and the big Doki injury, and now he's in House of Torture and he's getting the comeback challenge redemption match, fucking Korakuen Hall on a Monday night on a Road 2 show. Fuck.
That is a shitty job. Just fucking unbelievable. I don't know. Yeah. They're going to squeeze in 1,700. And they're going to rock that building. They're going to rock that fifth floor, baby. I don't know, man. That one's great. I guarantee you, Joel, that will get votes at the year-end awards for most disappointing thing to happen with New Japan in the year. Guarantee it. Because to me, it really is. That is an absolute fumble. Yeah. But here's the thing. Let me be the devil's advocate. Maybe play the devil's advocate. The match is going to be really good, though. I think the match will be really good. You don't think the match will be good? I think the match will be really good.
Oh, of course it will. It'll be great. Yeah. Right. Again, I think this is going to be my thesis statement that I don't think the House of Torture affiliation is going to be that much of a obstacle for Doki having a really good match.
Yeah, he's already it. I mean, he's the OG of this, right? You know, he could turn this kind of shit into something pretty good. So, yeah, I think the match is going to be really fucking good. As much as we bust balls, Despy does work very hard to have his spotlight Cork and Hall matches. So I think this would be fun. But again, it just boggles my mind that we're doing it here on a Road 2 show. But all right, what do I know?
New champion?
Great question. That's a good question. They almost have to, don't they?
I would like that to be the case. Again, I've got my heart set on a Doki Fujita match for Wrestle Kingdom, but the fact that they're doing it on a Road 2 Korakuen Hall show is making me doubt that. I think probably looking at a successful Despy defense.
I mean, it's not the freshest thing, that's for sure. I think you almost have to do that, though. Yeah, almost have to change that title. Because then what the... Then that's the greatest fumble. Not the greatest fumble. They've had plenty. But it's one of the more head-scratching ones in recent times. Like, if fucking Doki just fucking eats a pin in the middle of the ring at the 20-minute mark, what was the point of all of this? I almost feel like he has to win. I'm going to say he wins. Fuck it. He wins.
Let's go. It's the House of Torture Renaissance. We're all in on the house. Right, this show on Monday also has a pair of singles matches that I'm quite into. Yu Uemura versus Yuto Ice and Shota Umino versus Oscar. I'm excited for both of those.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, we're trying to heat up the tag thing, but that is pretty good. I'm telling you, the idea of having those two young studs as a tag team going through World Tag League, challenging for the titles against, again, new debuting, new gimmick, fresh, that's one of the more exciting things we got going on right now. That should be fun. That should be really good.
There's not really anything else interesting on that show.
Hiroshi Tanahashi singles matches against fucking... You know, they're going to wheel out.
Nakamura, yeah, Tanahashi versus Shinsuke Nakamura. That's the sixth match on
the show. So is that right? Okay, wait a minute. That doesn't make much sense.
I'm joking. I'm doing a funny. There's a show on the 9th. There's not really anything good on that. Yuya versus Daiki Nagai singles match. That should be fun. Then the 11th. There's another Road 2 show in Saitama. I think these are all televised, actually. They're televising everything now. On that one, there's the junior heavyweight tag match that I mentioned before, Kukai and El Desperado against Doki and Sho, which, you know, we can preview that next week. And we've got a card for King of Pro Wrestling. I'm hearing tickets for that are not doing so well, you know, we'll see. We'll give it time. So the card for that is first match, Titan, Hiromu, and Shingo against Clark Connors, Ishimori, and Finlay. So, yeah, nice to see Titan back. Maybe
Titan, yeah.
Junior Tag League. Yeah. Second match, Driller Maloney versus Sanada in a singles match.
Do we need to talk about his clown shoes? We need to talk about Sanada's clown shoes.
The Astro Boy shoes.
They fucking stink. You know what? You're a 40-year-old man. What the fuck are you wearing? You fucking dolt. What is that? Jesus. Clown shoes. Fucking clown shoes. I mean, seriously, a 12-year-old I can see in those fucking things. You're a grown fucking man. Ugh. Yeah. I wanted to bite him on the forehead. I swear to God.
Third match is Hirooki Goto's return. So he's fresh off his E Honda exploits in the Street Fighter movie. It's Yo, Yoshihashi, and Hirooki Goto against Kosei Fujita, Hartley Jackson, and Yohei Oiwa. Fourth match is the New Japan World TV Championship match, ELP 20th anniversary, and Hiroshi Tanahashi's final match at Sumo Hall.
El Fantasma, I'm sorry, what?
Against Hiroshi Tanahashi.
I'm sorry, El Fantasma's what?
20th anniversary.
Aside from his immediate family, who gives a shit?
I'm not sure why they put that on the, right. On the website.
Who gives a fuck? You could have told me it's his 50th fucking anniversary. I'd have been like, ah, okay, great. For 20 years of mediocrity. Congratulations. All right, I'm sorry. I had to get that in.
Yeah, so yeah, ELP against Tanahashi for the TV title. That's certainly a choice for Tanahashi's final Sumo Hall match. Fifth match, Never Openweight Championship, Oleg Bolton against Evil. Sixth match, IWGP Tag Team Championship, Yuya and Shota against Oscar and Yuto. Seventh match, Global Heavyweight Championship, Yotsuji versus Gabe Kidd. And eighth match, World Heavyweight Championship, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Konosuke Takeshita. So another,
that's a good show.
I think, strong-looking show, yeah.
That's a fucking solid show right there. Yeah, that should be fun. That should be good. I'm still wrapping my head around the 20th anniversary. Like, who gives a shit? Holy fuck. That's amazing. First of all,
happy birthday celebration match.
Wow. I had no idea he was in the business for 20 years, to be quite frank. But, well, 20 years of greatness. All right. Whatever.
20 years, this is.
Stupid. All right. Well, listen, no Don Fale, so I will not be tuning in. But everybody else.
Canceling your world subscription.
Canceled.
We want canceled Don Fale. Give us the Don.
Give us the Don. Actually, I would love to see his matches now. Like, now they're just comic relief at this point. I just want to see those six-minute fucking Andre the Giant, circa 1991, can't even hold himself up in the ring matches. Oh, boy. What a world we live in. All right. That's not a bad show, though.
On the right when he went to punch someone, he would just go straight over, wouldn't he? And he wouldn't be getting back up. Like, oh, no.
Here's the thing. It's not like we're 20 minutes. Man down. It's not like it was 20 minutes. It was literally not even a minute into the match. And he can't stand. He's holding on to the fucking rope while throwing the punches in the corner. Holy mother of God. All right. And again, the idea of everyone doing the heavy lifting while he's sucking wind. Ugh, just a disgrace. All right. That's that. I love at this point, Don Fale's my favorite wrestler. I'm voting for him Wrestler of the Year.
Let's end it there.
You got it. Bye.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.